Okay, we've got a huge list, and the other is actually downstairs, so it's all good, but we do need to kind of keep it short, like a couple of minutes per person, master, please. So we have to get through quite a few people, and afterwards we're going to head straight over to Mains and have further festivities there. So please join us. So I'll be very quick in between, just announcing people's names to save some time. So first up on the open mic, Alexis Campbell-Banner.
You have heard the beat of the offshore wind and the thresh of the deep sea rain. Have you heard the song, how long, pull out on the trail again? And I must go down to the seas again, to the backward gypsy life, to the gull's way and the whale's way, where the wind's like a whetted knife. And all I ask is a merry yarn from a laughing fellow rover, and a quiet sleep and a sweet dream when the long drift's over.
Thanks, Alexis. Next we have Ben Burns.
I'm going to read a small section from Invisible Cities by Italo Calvino. Cities and Signs 1. You walk for days among trees and among stones. Rarely does the eye light on a thing, and then only when it has recognized that thing as the sign of another thing. A print in the sand indicates the tiger's passage. A marsh announces a vein of water. The hibiscus flower at the end of winter. All the rest is silent and interchangeable. Trees and stones are only what they are. Finally, the journey leads to the city of Tamara. You penetrate it along streets thick with signboards, jutting from the walls. The eye does not see things, but images of things that mean other things. Pincers point out the tooth drawer's house, a tankard the tavern, halberds the barracks, scales the grocers. Statues and shields depict lions, dolphins, towers, stars. A sign that something, who knows what, has as its sign a lion or a dolphin or a tower or a star. Other signals warn of what is forbidden in a given place. To enter the alley with wagons, to urinate behind the kiosk, to fish with your pole from the bridge. And what is allowed, watering zebras, playing bowls, burning relatives' corpses. From the doors of the temples, the god's statues are seen, each portrayed with his attributes, the cornucopia, the hourglass, the Medusa, so that the worshipper can recognize them and address his prayers correctly. If a building has no signboard or figure, its very form and the position it occupies in the city's order suffice to indicate its function. The palace, the prison, the mint, the Pythagorean school, the brothel. The wares, too, which the vendors display on their stalls are valuable not in themselves, but as signs of other things. The embroidered headband stands for elegance, the gilded palanquin power, the volumes of Averroes learning, the ankle bracelet, voluptuousness. Your gaze scans the streets as if they were written pages. The city says everything you must think, makes you repeat her discourse. And while you believe you are visiting Tamara, you are only recording the names with which she defines herself and all her parts. However the city may really be, beneath this thick coating of signs, whatever it may contain or conceal, you leave Tamara without having discovered it. Outside, the land stretches empty to the horizon. The sky opens with speeding clouds. In the shape that chance and wind give the clouds, you are already intent on recognizing figures, a sailing ship, a hand, an elephant.
Thank you, Ben. Next we have Mary O'Connell.
explore?
Well, these are difficult times, and about a fortnight ago, a friend introduced me to this. I know a fair amount of Derek Mann, but this is one I didn't know. It's called Everything Is Going to Be All Right. How should I not be glad to contemplate the clouds clearing beyond the dormer window and a high tide reflected on the ceiling? There will be dying. There will be dying. But there is no need to go into that. The poems flow from the hand unbidden, and the hidden source is the watchful heart. The sun rises in spite of everything, and the far cities are beautiful and bright. I lie here in a riot of sunlight, watching the day break and the clouds flying. Everything is going to be all right.
Thank you, Mary. Next we have Dean Brown.
Thank you. I hope to be a poem by a poet who's an old favourite of mine, Chad Simic. The poem's called The Devils. You were a victim of semi-romantic anarchism in its most irrational form. I was ill at ease in an ambiguous world deserted by providence. We drank wine and made love in the afternoon. The neighbors' TVs were tuned to soap operas. The unhappy couples spoke little. There were interminable pauses. Soft organ music. Someone coughing. It's like Strindberg's dream play, you said. What is, I asked, and got no reply. I was watching a spider on the ceiling. It was the kind Saint Veronica ate in her martyrdom. That woman subsisted on spiders only, I told the janitor when he came to fix the faucet. He wore dirty overalls and a derby hat. Once he had been an inmate of a notorious state institution. I'm no longer Jesus, he informed us happily. He believed only in devils now. This building is full of them, he confided. One could see their horns and tails if one caught them in their bats. He's got dark ages on his brain, you said. Who does? I asked, and got no reply. The spider had the beginnings of a web over our heads. The world was quiet, except when one of us took a sip of wine.
Thank you, Dean. Next we have Nicola Moffat.
Can I just say the talent in this room is something else, and I'm not talking about the looks of you. Unreal, guys.
Unreal.
No,
unreal.
Unreal. Okay, this is a poem by one of my all-time favorite poets, Adrian Rich. And it's called Prospective Immigrants, Please Note. Either you will go through this door or you will not go through. If you go through, there is always the risk of remembering your name. Things look at you doubly and you must look back and let them happen. If you do not go through, it is possible to live worthily, to maintain your attitudes, to hold your position, to die bravely. But much will blind you, much will evade you. At what cost, who knows? The door itself makes no promises. It is only a door.
Thank you, Nicola. Next we have Avril McGregor.
This
transport Jet by Tony Hoagland. Sometimes I wish I were still out on the back porch, drinking Jet fuel with the boys, getting louder and louder as the empty cans drop out of our pores like booster rockets falling back to Earth. And we soar up into the summer stars. Summer. The big sky river rushes overhead, bearing asteroids and mist, blind fish and old spacesuits with skeletons inside. On Earth, men celebrate their hairiness. And it is good, a way of letting life out of the box, uncapping the bottle to let the effervescence gush through the narrow, usually constricted neck. And now the crickets plug in their appliances in unison. And then the fireflies flash dots and dashes in grass, like punctuation for the labyrinthine, untrue tales of sex someone is telling in the dark. Though no one really hears, we gaze into the night as if remembering the bright, unbroken planet we once came from, to which we will never be permitted to return. We are amazed how hurt we are. We would give anything for what we have.
Thank you, Alfred. Next we have Seamus Harrington.
Due to a clerical error, I have to repeat one from a couple of years back. It's by E.E. Cummings. May I feel, said he. You could repeat it.
Of course.
May I feel, said he. May I feel, said he. I'll squeal, said she. Just once, said he. It's fun, said she. May I touch, said he. How much, said she. A lot, said he. Why not, said she. Let's go, said he. Not too far, said she. What's too far, said he. Where you are, said she. May I stay, said he. Which way, said she. Like this, said he. If you kiss, said she. May I move, said he. Is it love, said she. If you're willing, said he. But you're killing, said she. But it's life, said he. But your wife, said she. Now, said he. Oh, said she. Tip top, said he. Don't stop, said she. Oh no, said he. Go slow, said she. Cuckum, said he. Said she. You're divine, said he. You are mine, said she.
Thank you, Seamus. We have Cedric Picon next. Cedric.
This one is titled Rough House. Be a man, he said. It smacked of every other type of heated exchange. It slapped and crackled like a furnace fanning the flames. It felt like old furniture, tired and stained. It was all unintentional, I swear. But it's too late. It finished.
Thanks, Cedric. We have Joe Harding next, please.
He's gone.
Oh, is he? Then Charles Stark, please.
Famous here. When you went to California, you made a point of going to see Brian Moore, well-known novelist, once upon a time, for a lot of novels. And he was living on Malibu, and it's a place that I think a couple of sentences by Joan Didion is to put in perspective. 5 days in Malibu describes that not most idiosyncratic of beach communities, 27 miles of coastline, with no hotel, no passable restaurant, nothing to attract the tourist dollar. Malibu tends to astonish and disappoint those who have never seen it, and yet its very name remains in the imagination of people all over the world, a kind of shorthand for the easy life. And this poem by Heaney isn't all that easy to read, frankly. Remembering Malibu, the Pacific at your door was wider and colder than my notion of the Pacific, and that was perfect, for I could not have rotted beside the lukewarm ocean I imagined. I would have rotted, I think. Yet, no way was as cold, ascetic as our monkfish snowed into Atlantic. No beehive put hot for you on the abstract sands of Malibu. It was early Mondrian and his dunes misting towards the ideal forms though the wind and sea neighed loud as wind and sea noise amplified. I was there in the flesh where I imagined I might be and underwent the bluster of the day. But why should it not come home to me? Atlantic storms have clenched the cells of the great skellig, the steps cut in the rock. I never climbed between the graveyard and the boat slip. Are wilted solid to my instep, but to rear and kick and cast that shoe beside the other western sea, far from skellig and far, far from the suck of puddled wintry ground, our footsteps filled with glowing sand.
Thank you, Charles. Next we have Billy Ramsey.
I read a poem by Poet Who Died Last Year called Leonard Cohen from the Canadian canon. I once believed a single line in a Chinese poem could change forever how blossom fell, and that the moon itself climbed on the grief of concise weeping men to journey over cups of wine. I thought invasions were begun for crows to pick at a skeleton, dynasties sown and spent to serve the language of a final lament. I thought governors ended their lives as sweetly drunken monks, telling time by rain and candles, instructed by an insect's pilgrimage across the page. All this so one could send an exile's letter, perfect letter, to an ancient hometown friend. I chose a lonely country, broke with love, scorned the fraternity of war. I sharpened my tongue against the pumice moon, I floated my soul on cherry wine, a perfumed barge for the lords of memory, to languish on, to drink, to whisper out their store of strength, as if along the mist beyond the shore, the girls their power still obeyed, like clocks wound for a thousand years. I practiced until my tongue grew sore. Brown petals wind like fire around my poems. I aimed them at the stars, but like rainbows, they were bent before they sawed the world in half. Who can trace the canyon paths the cattle have carved out of time in their wanderings from meadowlands to feasts? Layer after layer of autumn leaves are swept away. Something forgets us. Perfectly.
Thank you, Ray. Next we have Patricia Walsh.
Hi, is Tom Scully in the audience tonight?
Well, if he's not,
he's in, you're in for a treat, because I read one of his poems called Ode to Capitalism. Yeah. It's from his eighth section, What New Centurion. Yes. Ode to Capitalism. Oh, for B-Day on those soft mornings after a fashionable night. Rushing for work without time for a shower, you realise Frenchmen are always right. Oh, for electric toothbrush on a 3-minute timer, an ensuite for every child, smoothing the pathway towards school time, hurrying the family outside. Oh, for the invention of something others does need it, something that cannot be thrown out unless it's replaced by two or three. A heated towel rail with a metal basket to catch falling towels, and brass bumpers to stop people walking into it. Bring me another. Thank you.
Thank you, Trish. Next we have Cal Doyle.
Those assholes who break out their phone on a poetry thing. I'm sorry. The poem is by Gwendolyn Brooks. It's called We Real Cool. The pool players, seven at the Golden Shovel. We real cool. We left school. We lurk late. We strike straight. We sing sin. We thin gin. We jazz June. We die soon.
Thank you, Carol. Next we have John W. Sexton.
A very short poem by the German poet Paul Celan, which some of you may pronounce Paul Celan. Appropriately, it's called Irish. Leave me the mass path on the wheat stairs to your rest, the mass path to your going, the leave to cut turf on the ray of your heart, the morning.
Thank you, John. Next we have Michael Ray.
By Mark Walden. So I was at home doing the washing up, and I thought, perhaps I'm using too much washing up liquid. I actually like to use a lot of washing up liquid because I think it makes the work easier. Well, that's the impression I get anyway. But I've had that feeling that some people think I use too much. I definitely had the impression that my parents thought I was using too much washing up liquid when I was over at their house last week and helping out after lunch. And then today I thought, you know what? I can use as much damn washing up liquid as I can in my own damn house, and no one can stop me. I could squirt the whole of this bottle straight down the drain if I felt like it. And if my wife said, what the heck are you doing? I could just smile at her and carry on. No one could stop me if I sold the damn house and everything in it and spent all the money I got on the sale on washing up liquid. I could have it delivered in tankers if I could get the parking permits. I'm appalled that I could actually do that. No one could have me arrested. Because, after all, it's my damn money. How the hell is it that kind of thing allowed to happen? Someone really needs to have the authority to intervene and protect it from myself.
Next we have Thomas Hurren.
This is by Frank O'Hara. Lana Turner has collapsed. I was trotting along and suddenly it started raining and snowing, and you said it was hailing, but hailing hits you on the head hard, so it was really snowing and raining, and I was in such a hurry to meet you, but the traffic was acting exactly like the sky, and suddenly I see a headline, Lana Turner has collapsed. There is no snow in Hollywood, there is no rain in California. I've been to lots of parties and acted perfectly disgraceful, but I never actually collapsed. Oh, Lana Turner, we love you, get up.
Because next we have Bernadette Gallagher.
George Harden. Well, for ink. Someone never said to me, write about what you see, and no one ever said again, do not go without your pen. And what your pen presumes to write will take you through the fleeting night. And when you wake to hear the dawn, the ink is there, all doubts are gone.
Thank you, Bernadette. And next we have Niall Herriot.
I don't know how that Billy Ramsell does it, but I thought I'd try one from memory too. So I picked a simple, well, an easy one to remember. One of Patrick Galvin's best known ones. Today is the feast day of St. Anne. I am the mad woman of Cork. Pray for me. Yesterday in Castle Street, I saw two goblins at my feet and a horse without a head. By the way, this is not word for word, it's just, I'm just recording, so that's at least. A horse without a head, pulling a cart with the dead to the graveyard at Turner's Cross. I am the mad woman of Cork. No one will talk to me. I'm just going to do three verses out of, I don't know, seven or so. I have an eagle in my brain. Sometimes I see a train crashing at the station. If I told people that, they'd choke me. And then where would I be? I am the mad woman of Cork. I have no sense. When I die soon, don't burn or bury me, but carry me in a boat from here to Roach's Point, and I will anoint the sea with the oil of alabaster. I am the mad woman of Cork. This is the feast day of Anne. Feast day of Anne. Feed me. Thank you.
Thank you, Niall. Next we have Rob Urquhart.
Okay. I think I did this poem last year and the year before on this night, so I'm just going to keep on doing it. It's from Lao Tzu, it's from the Tao Te Ching. It's the 27th verse. A good runner leaves no tracks. A good speech has no flaws to censure. A good computer uses no tallies. A good door is well shut without bolts and cannot be opened. A good knot is tied without rope and cannot be loosed. The wise man is always good at helping people so that none are cast out. He is always good at saving things so that none are thrown away. This is called applied intelligence. Surely the good man is the bad man's teacher and the bad man is the good man's business. If the one does not respect his teacher or the other doesn't love his business, his error is very great. This is indeed an important secret.
Just three more to go, and then we're going to head off to mains before we get defenestrated. Next up we have...
Kieran
McCartan next, please.
These are the lyrics to Andy's Chest by Lou Reed. It's about a transformer. It's produced by David Bowie and expressed by Lou Reed. If I could be anything in the world that flew, I would be a bat and come swooping after you. And if the last time you were here, things were a bit askew, well, you know what happens after dark. When rattlesnakes lose their skins and their hearts, and all the missionaries lose their bark. All the trees are calling after you, and all the venom snipers after you. Are all the mountains holding after you? If I could be any one of the things in this world that bite, instead of a dentured ocelot on a leash, I'd rather be a kite and be tied to the end of your string and flying in the air, baby, at night. 'Cause you know what they say about honey bears when you shave off all their baby hairs, you have a hairy-minded pink bear bear. And all the bells are rolling out for you, and stones are all erupting out for you, and all the cheap blood suckers are flying after you. Yesterday, Daisy May and Biff were grooving on the street, and just like in a movie, her hands became her feet. Her belly button was her mouth, which meant she tasted what she'd speak. But the funny thing is what happened to her nose. It grew until it reached all over her toes. Now when people say her feet smell, they mean her nose. And curtains laced with diamonds, dear, for you. And all the Roman noblemen for you. And kingdom's Christian soldiers, dear, for you. And melting ice-capped mountaintops for you. And knights in flaming silver robes for you. And bats that with a kiss turn prince for you. Swoop, swoop, oh baby rock, rock, swoop, swoop, rock, rock, swoop, swoop, rock, rock.
Thank you, Kieran. Our penultimate reader tonight is Samir Usharfi.
Hello. I'm going to read a poem by our very own Paul Casey.
Yeah!
which I discovered recently in a book.
A recent book?
It's recently published anyway, and I feel I have a connection to this poem, and I really like it, and you know, I chose this poem also as a tribute to you, Paul, because of everything that you do for us here. Exile. My mother is taking me to Africa. She takes me from the arms of her mother, the reach of her great-great-grandmothers. I breathe in the womb of Africa and smile with African children. See their eyes reach through mine to meet all my grandmothers. Thank you.
So our final poet for tonight, and thank you all for coming. It's been a superb night. We have to get the heck out of here really quickly after this. Straight over to Maine's. They're going to put on some food for us, and I'll come in and get us a round of drinks then. So please, we need to eject ourselves from the building fairly quickly. But before I call up our last poet for tonight, can we have a round of applause, please, for our five-word winner and the shortlisted poets, Taylor Regan, Siobhan Campbell, and John Bayless Post. Thank you, guys. Thank you very much. Okay, so our last poet for tonight is Stanley Knott.
I'm going to combine two pieces. One is a song written by one of the poem. They both have the same title, Home Thoughts from Abroad. The song is written by Clifford G. Ward, and the poem is written by some strange English poet called Robert Browning. I could be a millionaire if I had the money. I could own a mansion, but I don't think I'd like that. But I might write a song that makes you laugh. Now that would be fun, and you could tell your friends in England you'd like that. But now I've chosen aeroplanes and boats to come between us, and a line onto a paper wouldn't go amiss. How is Worcestershire? Is it still the same between us? Do you still use television to send you fast asleep? Can you last another week? Does the cistern still leak? Or have you found a man to mend it? Oh, and by the way, how's your broken heart? Is that mended too? I miss you. I really do. I've been reading Browning, Keats, and William Wordsworth, and they all seem to be saying the same thing for me. You see, I like the words they use, and I like the way they use them. You know, Home Thoughts from Abroad is such a beautiful poem. Oh, to be in England now that April's there, and whoever wakes in England sees some morning unaware that the lowest boughs and the brush would sheaf round the elm tree bole are in tiny leaf, while the chaffish sinks on the orchard bough in England now. And after April, when May follows, and the white throat bills and all the swallows, hark where my blossom pear tree in the hedge leans to the field and scatters on the clover blossoms and dewdrops at the bent spray's edge. That's the wise thrush. He sings each song twice over, lest you should think he never could recapture the first fine careless rapture. And through the fields look rough with hoary dew, all will be gay when noontide wakes anew. The buttercups, the little children's flower, far brighter than this gaudy melon flower. You see, I know how Robert Browning must have felt, as I'm feeling the same way about you, wondering what you're doing and if you need some help. Do I still occupy your mind? Am I being so unkind? Do you find it very lonely, or have you found someone to laugh at? Oh, and by the way, are you laughing now? Because I'm not. I miss you. I really do.
Cool.